You're standing in front of millions, words on the teleprompter swimming before your eyes. Your heart hammers against your ribs. Your throat constricts. The camera's red light burns into you like an accusation. This isn't stage fright. This is something far more primal, more terrifying. Your body has decided, without consulting you, that you're about to die. For two decades, this was my reality. War zones? Fine. Natural disasters? No problem. A calm Tuesday morning broadcast? Absolute terror. The contradiction defined my existence. A correspondent who thrived in genuine danger, but crumbled during routine live shots. What viewers interpreted as energy was actually panic. My nervous system staging a full-scale mutiny in real time. About a quarter of Americans experience panic attacks, though experts suspect the true number approaches half. We're living through a hidden epidemic, one that thrives in silence and shame. 12 years old, numb on Xanax at my father's funeral, I repeated the same hollow phrase to mourners. At least he lived a full life. He was 42 when his plane went down. 30 years later, reaching that same age felt like crossing an invisible finish line or starting a race I never wanted to run. My journey through this landscape reveals something unexpected. Panic isn't the enemy we think it is. It's a smoke detector gone haywire, an ancient alarm system struggling to make sense of modern life. When panic strikes, your rational brain becomes a passenger. The amygdala, your brain's ancient alarm system, hijacks the controls, flooding your body with survival chemicals. The hypothalamus triggers a cascade through your pituitary and adrenal glands. Pupils dilate, sweat glands activate, digestion shuts down. Except there's no tiger, just a camera, a teleprompter, and expectation. Panic attacks peak within minutes, though time stretches like taffy. The cruelest part? There's no actual threat. About 1 in 20 Americans lives with panic disorder, with public speaking affecting 3/4 of us. Up to half of cardiac emergency room visits are actually panic attacks. People genuinely believe they're dying. Stanford researcher Robert Sapolsky offered evolutionary context. Fear has existed for 500 million years, but apes developed something more sophisticated, the ability to get scared sooner. Early humans refined this into abstract fear, imagining threats before they materialized. This biological insurance policy enabled planning and symbolic thinking, but our refined abstraction made imagined threats sometimes more damaging than real dangers. Evolution selected for enhanced planning abilities that also increased worry capacity, a survival advantage with lasting health costs. My first major attack struck during my senior thesis presentation at Williams College. Despite mastering Turkish-Israeli relations, my turtleneck became a noose. Words vanished, vision tunneled. I stumbled through, completely unaware I'd experienced panic. I thought I'd simply choked. By 2016, I'd mastered deception. My career ascended while my mental state plummeted. Depression consumed me in Tel Aviv. A psychiatrist prescribed Paxil, my companion for 18 years. When ABC News Radio hired me in 2005, my nerves during broadcasts were panic attacks disguised as professionalism. But television changed everything. Diane Sawyer saw my visible nervousness as compelling energy. My anxiety became my brand. I discovered movement calmed panic. Walking while reporting gave it nowhere to land. But stand-up reports required stillness, and stillness invited terror. I'd grip myself rigid to avoid trembling, leaving with an aching back and sweat-soaked clothes. The hiding required elaborate rituals, fake meditation naps, strategic smoking breaks, arriving just in time to avoid anxious waiting, pre-broadcast push-ups, nonstop chatter until the camera's red light. Sometimes these tricks worked. Often they failed, leaving me with the shame hangover, that sickening certainty everyone would finally see through me. For years, my psychiatrist and I cycled through medications. Paxil helped general anxiety, but not panic. Klonopin erased my memory so completely during one flight that I have zero recollection of landing. Xanax became my secret weapon, tiny pills hidden in my wallet, dissolved under my tongue before broadcasts. Propranolol calmed my racing heart, but not my racing thoughts. ADHD medications like Adderall sharpened my focus, but potentially worsened my anxiety. Nothing worked consistently, partly because most psychiatric medications were developed decades ago, with research essentially stalling in the 1990s. The collapse I'd always feared arrived in January 2020. I made a terrible reporting error about Kobe Bryant's death. The suspension went global, hundreds of publications covering my mistake, social media erupting in judgment. The shame was excruciating, yet underneath it, I felt strange relief. The professional disaster I'd been dreading had finally landed, and I was still standing. Convinced my decades of panic had ravaged my organs, I requested comprehensive testing. Studies showed chronic anxiety increases heart disease risk and damages digestive systems. Most disturbing, social rejection increases premature death risk by 100%, more than smoking a pack daily. The results? Slightly low sodium and vitamin D. Everything else was normal. Despite years of multiple weekly panic attacks, I was extremely healthy. Meanwhile, a groundbreaking 2022 study demolished the chemical imbalance theory of depression, finding no convincing evidence linking depression to lower serotonin. For our Paleolithic ancestors, tribal expulsion meant certain death, vulnerable to starvation and predators. This explains why our brains process social rejection as physical pain. During live broadcasts, I wasn't worried about millions of viewers. I was worried about the small tribe in the control room who could judge my worth. December 2020, another panic attack during a live COVID vaccine broadcast. On a Southwest flight afterward, I confided in Kat, a fellow passenger. When she shared her daughter's struggles with emetophobia, I realized talking about panic could be powerful medicine. My producer mentioned her sister's similar experiences. My boss showed only sympathy. Each conversation revealed how many people shared these struggles. Yet organized support was virtually non-existent. While Alcoholics Anonymous has over 123,000 groups worldwide, panic support was nowhere. I eventually joined a virtual therapy group in Brooklyn. Introducing myself as a TV correspondent with panic attacks felt liberating. Others faced more severe impacts, some completely isolated by fears of driving or social interaction. Understanding this evolutionary context brought enormous relief. My anxiety wasn't evidence of being broken. It was evidence my body was working exactly as designed. Seeking new approaches, I reconnected with Lane Jaffe, a breathwork practitioner. His technique, rapid breathing, creating deliberate hyperventilation, left my body shaking, hands curled into lobster claws, followed by overwhelming sobbing. Relief lasted weeks, but I feared an inescapable gyre of grief and pain. As psychedelics emerged as promising treatments, my wife scheduled a guided mushroom journey with Farah, an underground guide. During my heroic dose of 5.5 grams, I experienced visions of granite mountains and ancient oak bark growing in time-lapse. Though Farah tried guiding me to confront my father's death, I remained too self-aware to surrender. 6 months later, I traveled to Peru for ayahuasca ceremonies. While others experienced profound visions, I remained blocked despite triple doses. My breakthrough came during Reiki when Gloria pressed points symbolizing the father relationship. I broke down sobbing. The toad venom ceremony brought complete sensory shutdown before unleashing torrents of grief. Dr. Rick Strassman later explained 5% of people have natural resistance to certain psychedelics. Ketamine became my next frontier. At Dr. Dan Gill's Ojai retreat, I experienced terrifying ego death, just enough consciousness to know I existed but not who I was. The playlist became my mantra. I release control and surrender to the flow of love. My final session brought a soaring journey over Amazonian jungle before diving off a cliff. Instead of crashing, the earth rose to catch me, the ultimate trust fall. Brownstein shared his own decades-long battle with depression, admitting, "You don't just get better by taking a pill. Wellness is work." When reviewing my last on-air panic attack with Michael Telch, director of the University of Texas Anxiety Lab, what felt catastrophic to me was barely noticeable to him. My panic questionnaires showed improvement from severe to clinically mild after abandoning magical thinking, breathing rituals, and antidepressants, supported by psychedelics and grief processing. He introduced me to Jake Becker, who'd conquered debilitating panic centered on fear of visible sweating through exposure therapy and humor. My 18-month panic-free streak broke during an unexpected attack while interviewing a homeowner. Despite PTSD from covering previous massacres, I agreed to report from the Uvalde school shooting. Months later, actor Neil Brown Jr. shared how during ketamine treatment, he'd experienced multiple mini panics without physical symptoms. The fear existed only in his mind. Since then, he'd been panic-free. Like Neil, I draw strength from psychedelic experiences, which enhance my meditation practice and encourage neuroplasticity. Self-compassion leads to better outcomes than perfectionism. I've learned to face portals to pain, those dark corners psychedelics helped me approach. Dr. Vora reframes crying as free therapy, the body's way of processing unmetabolized grief. Constant happiness isn't the goal, it's experiencing the full spectrum of human emotions. Standing outside Van Nuys Middle School for a live report, I noticed panic's absence. Despite typical triggers, I remained steady. Not because I'd conquered panic forever, but because I'd learned to live with its possibility without fear. Fear isn't the enemy. It's the alarm system that kept our ancestors alive. Your panic isn't proof you're broken. It's proof you're exquisitely, sometimes painfully, human. The goal isn't to eliminate fear, but to recalibrate your relationship with it. Healing isn't about perfection. It's about showing up to the full catastrophe of being alive.